Hi, this is Philip Meyer, welcoming you to another episode of Talking About Platforms.
And we are Daniel Trabucchi
and Thomas Buganza, the co-hosts of this podcast, where we present and discuss relevant discoveries from the field of platform research.
In every episode, we have a guest sharing with us one of his or her latest insights on platforms, starting from a paper, a project, or a book to make it accessible to everyone.
And with that, let's just jump right into the conversation.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Talking About Platforms. I'm Daniel Trabucchi, your regular co-host, and today with me there is Tommaso.
Hi, everybody.
Today, we are very glad to welcome a friend of ours, someone that we met regularly for our Sim Platform conference, who is Marin Jovanovic, Associate Professor at Copenhagen Business School. Hi, Marin.
Hi, how are you guys?
Very well, and we are very, very happy to have you with us.
So let's start, Marin. We open every single episode pretty much in the same way, and we ask everybody what are platforms to you, and also how you ended up, making research and spending your part of your life in dealing with platforms. So what happened to bring you here?
Very good question. So to me, I arrived to platform research slightly different. My PhD focus was servitization of manufacturing, right? And then for, let's say, over a decade, the community has been researching servitization in the manufacturing sector, right? How to add services, how to bundle services with the products, how to provide solutions. And then gradually, digitalization became a very important topic. And the community even coined this term digital servitization, right? And I really didn't want it to follow up with reinventing everything that we have done during the servitization about capabilities, about structures, about but I wanted to connect to this platform research and try to look at the digital servitization, looking the platform lenses, right? So industrial platforms was a gradual transition for my research, building on top of what I know, very well, considering I spend now over 10 years on this. So my focus was predominantly industrial or B2B platforms.
Well, I would say this leads to the first content question, let's put it like this. You started from the industrial field and you are now super recognized in the platform world for your works on B2B platforms. So I would say maybe for our listeners, if you'd like to summarize a bit, what are your main findings and the main peculiarities also of B2B platforms? And from there, we'll start with our usual chat.
So it's a very challenging question, right? And a very broad question, because we need to be really careful how we are observing this phenomena, right? So we could take the information system angle and focus a little bit more on the architecture, the platform architecture, or maybe we could take a more management view and focus on the governance of the platform and the development of such platforms, right? The industrial sector has been digitizing a lot. Predominantly IoT sensors became democratized in a way. The vast amount of data suddenly became available to manufacturers, and they've been thinking, well, we need to leverage these data for insights and, of course, improving the value proposition for the customers, right? So the first I see it as a gradual, progressive approach, a gradual transition, right? So initially, the platforms consisted of simple monitoring, right? Simple monitoring services and simple sensors. And as the manufacturer or specific company invested more in these sensors, more advanced sensors like LIDAR sensors that can assess the environment in a very proficient way, we saw that they started developing optimization services, right? So now we have a fleet. Now it's not only monitoring. Now it's kind of the whole fleet. We could optimize them. And eventually, what we see in the last years that, well, now we have an emergence of autonomous solutions, right? So we progressed all the way to this, Porter and Heppelmann would say, right, smart and connected products, where we have a fully autonomous solutions. But now the trick is, where is the platform logic there, right? So this is more on the digitized side, and the platform logic appears that probably initially we have more supply side development, right? From one side of the market, I would say, like this. So the manufacturers were trying to develop the platform, and then they were kind of opening up the demand side more. So they were trying to piloting with the customers and increasingly add more customers, different customers, unlock that side of the market, and eventually we have some version of the ecosystem that is different from the ecosystem that we observe in the B2C, but it is an ecosystem where this data now can be used can be used by other complementors to develop complementary solutions, right? So we see this co-specialization a notion that is characterized in the ecosystem literature, where the company does not have competencies anymore, because we are discussing advanced complementary solutions, advanced companies that are developing predictive analytics, or they specialized in the specific sectors, right? For instance, in the mining or in the maritime. So these are not add-ons anymore. These are companies with 20, 50, 100 employees focusing on a specific way to utilize this data and create value. And I will stop here for now. The notion of governance becomes even more complex, because we can't have a unified governance now, right? So these complementary applications and solutions required a unique, distinct value appropriation, because they will not be satisfied with, let's say, $2 per app or something. So they are very much aware of the value they create. That complicates the governance on these type of B2B ecosystems.
I think this is very fascinating, because we do have a lot of research out there talking about platforms in B2C environments, and we know some things about the main dynamics, and we know the importance of the network externalities. We know the importance of numbers. So what you just said is very relevant. So you can even become very powerful and rich with $2 per transaction if you got billions of transactions. But moving into the B2B world, many things probably change. So would it be correct saying that, first of all, numbers are reduced because, of course, there are less companies than people. But on the other side, also the awareness of these companies in terms of transactions, what they are giving and the kind of value that they're proposing, it's higher as a level of awareness, which means that they pretend more. And this is probably creating what you said, a more difficult government system, because it's difficult putting together and organizing all of these things. So I was thinking that maybe we can add another small variable to the equation, because on one side, the numbers are reduced, but probably the complexity and the value of the transacted goods is increased, which means that you can have less transactions that are more important. But on the other side, also companies are more aware of what they want, what they give. So maybe we can compensate the numbers with the, let's say, the depth of the service that are provided. So is this something that you currently see in your cases, in your searches?
Yeah, absolutely. So you're spot on. The network effects has been studied a lot, right, in the B2C, in the traditional platform markets, right? And then they are the golden, let's say, the golden mine of all platform research, because we try to generate, harvest, nudge network effects in a specific way. Here, right, the scope of the platform is usually more narrow, right? That's number one. And that, like, subsequently is driving like a smaller network size, right? And we see different types of network effects, what you were referring to. So the value of a transaction it could be even higher than in the traditional markets, because, you know, these are companies like Volvo, companies like big shipping operators. So the value of the projects and the value of the transaction could be very large. However, at the same time, they are very much careful about the data governance, and this is what is probably largely underexplored in the literature. So how data will be governed, and also, you know, this stickiness to the platform is another problem, because I will give you an example. B2B companies are, first of all, very aware of the value of the data, right? We know that, right? So this subsidized business model like Facebook or subsidizing one side for the other side just doesn't work here. That's number one. And number two, the companies, the advanced companies that are developing these platforms, they also would like to automate things, right? So once they, for instance, agree on specific terms, they would like this relationship, the digital relationship, to work, right? So we don't have any more this notion of I will consume the platform in a way the consumers will consume the platform. So right, it's directly related to the data governance and the revenue split like this area, right? And this is very project specific, right? So it's from one project to another project. They would like to renegotiate how the value of data and the different governance modes. So what I when I talk to one of the big 5G providers, there are few in the world only. They told me that, well, Marin, this is a very interesting model, right? Making this governance based on data, but in practice is very, very hard because the projects are different and they want to renegotiate for every project and every client a different governance terms, right? So this model of platform is, plays out differently.
This is super interesting because you're making me think about an old novel by Isaac Asimov. And it was about this super technological world in the future in which there is this big war and you've got machines versus machines, and it's almost impossible to win. But at a certain point, somebody starts winning, and they try to understand why. And the real reason is that at the end of the day, the winning party is having a human being doing calculations using paper and pencil. So why you make me think about this story? Because let's see if this is correct. The more the transaction becomes very specific and less generic, the more you said you are moving towards a sort of project-based transaction and relationship, which means probably that one of those things that we rely a lot upon, that is the matchmaking and the automated matchmaking. So you got all of these algorithms telling you what to buy, what to listen, and stuff like that, just doesn't work. Because probably you need to understand a very complex sets of variables in order to understand what is the right transaction. So at the end of the day, maybe for some kind of platforms, the matchmaking will go back to humans. So we might even witness a reverse kind of trend. Instead of having more and more AI, we might have more and more humans in doing that specific step into the data creation.
Absolutely. And we already see this. And I'm a big fan of the cyber physical integration as a concept. And I'm also trying to push that a concept with my two recent papers. Even the cognitive cyber-physical systems. So the notion of merging information system and the management research is overlapping more than ever, I would say. And as we are going towards the autonomous solutions, exactly what you just mentioned is observed in our cases, that we really need to understand the context very well in order to kind of let the algorithms do the matchmaking or any other task at hand, right? So this is definitely in the future a big topic for research.
You know, listening to the two of you talking, I guess there is still a lot to say in the B2B world of platforms, and probably also what is happening with Gen AI and AI at large may open up new avenues. As we often say in the podcast, as you know, since we know each other, the work that Tommaso and I are doing is mainly focusing on established firms, how they can learn from big tech and, let me say, more traditional platforms and bring those mechanisms within them. We often talk to them starting from B2C examples. I cannot say that we never work on B2B projects. It wouldn't be correct. But the vast majority of the stories we bring them is B2C for a very simple reason, because we are asking them to change their usual perception on how value is created from linear to a more complex ecosystem in the world of platforms, and asking them to take the user perspective in recognizing a different model, it's probably easier. I was wondering, what's your experience in talking about B2B platforms? What are the greatest barriers, the greatest challenges that you live in explaining these models to the managers and professionals you interview, you work with? Or also, you know, the difficult reactions that you saw. What's your take on this?
So I'll try to explain with the example from 5G ecosystem. In the B2B, so we worked like for now several years with the 5G component manufacturer. So it's a leading network equipment provider, and you know they are trying to build this ecosystem around them because they don't even know they can't envision all possible use cases for their equipment, right? So think about, you have a 5G module manufacturer, so they don't even do sensors. Sensor will have a 5G component. Software companies, they don't do even that. Robotic providers, they don't do even that. System integrators and consulting companies that put everything together, they don't do even that, right? So we see more and more, in especially in the industrial context, these kind of very anticipatory governance, very modular structure, and a very much envisioning solution concepts that can possibly unlock new market opportunities, right? So the generative ecosystem that we observe there basically is based on working with the partners, like about having really much forward-looking agency and very much open and flexible structures that are really much open to different governance structure, to different solution configurations. And just maybe modularity is a word that has been, you know, underrated in the recent years, because we attach modular predominantly to architecture, and modular can also be observed in the management term, right? To be more flexible, to be more reconfigurable. And I think this is where the B2B generative ecosystems are heading, right?
I think what you are saying, it's very interesting, because it's bringing back to my mind two discussions that already went on in the literature, but that take a different meaning in a way. On the one end, the origins, the roots of the platform literature, going back to product platforms, this idea of modularity, of basis upon which you build something else, that for sure come back to be interesting when you are within a firm talking with other firms, probably much more than when you are looking at the consumer world. So those concepts would be probably too complicated. On the other end, and this is happening quite often in the last months, you made me think about open innovation, but in a wider perspective. It's not open innovation just for innovation, but it kind of become open organization. Like, wherever we are, we need to think about who else can join us and help us in what we are doing.
Absolutely. And I will give you one really a good example, basically two, and two academic constructs that are very much related to the practitioners. The first one is microservices. We see this more and more, that basically you need to be able to customize services and to be able to provide these microservices. If you commit on a specific design, on a specific structure, probably this is not going to work. It's not going to scale, and you will need the microservices. The second thing is envelopment. We see this platform envelopment. I'm sure you're familiar with that one, ecosystem envelopment. So more and more we see this convergence of platforms and platforms of platforms, where one platform will be pretty much a complement or to another platform. It may orchestrate some ecosystem, or may orchestrate a platform on its own, but may also contribute to some other platform. And this meta view of meta organizations is happening in the B2B. Pretty much, I've seen papers about meta organizations, and I believe meta organizations are what I do 100%. These are organizations of organizations, right? So in that sense, I see this notion of, interconnectedness and, like, critical, and the data, as a enabling factor, right? So the companies will sell data. We have recent paper by Professor Ritala who said like that there are different ways of monetizing and selling data in B2B context. And this is where maybe B2C and B2B will merge, where the Facebook model will meet the B2B model. And in his paper, he shows really interesting data from the telco provider selling, the heat maps geography heat maps that could be leveraged for different purposes, from police and government to optimizing logistics to just promoting the local businesses based on the congestion and network capacity. So we see this quite a lot, the notion of smart cities. And how data can be utilized, right? In city of Stockholm, also we have a lot of data harvested from the traffic lights that could be monetized for local enterprises, right? So we know where the critical mass of people is located, and we can say that specific number of people will see ads, billboards, or you will have a flow in a specific area, and I will finish with the business analytics what I'm teaching currently at the Copenhagen Business School, where students increasingly try to complement existing models, regression models, classification models with external data, right? So utilizing weather data is now very common thing, right? So the temperature, the wind, external data that we could cross and improve our classifiers or our regression analysis, right? So data and development of different platforms are definitely the future.
So Marian, I love talking about data. This is actually where we started from. So when somebody asked me, where did you start from? It was data. So it's a passion of mine. But I would like also to move a little bit, because once I've got this opportunity of talking with somebody who's looking so carefully to B2B platforms, mm-hmm. I would like to use this opportunity to ask you a different thing, and it is more about physical assets. Mm-hmm. So we know that physical assets are very important. We know that blah blah blah. So in the Airbnb, you've got someone has got the physical assets, it's the supply side, and so on. Mm-hmm. But I also see that in B2B environments, in some cases, is the platform owner who is already owning some physical assets that are incredibly important for the final customers. So I'm thinking, for example, at Siemens Accelerator, mm-hmm. services platform that allows third parties to build new software solutions on top of Siemens turbines, Siemens products. So in a certain way, but I don't know if this is true, it's a sort of intuition, so I would like to have your point of view on this. I think that probably moving into the B2B environment, many companies might have incredibly valuable physical assets that can be the pivot, the core of platforms, and they are not using it properly. Probably a lot more than in B2C, because the transactions are more complicated, or because there is more technology, going from one place to another and so on. So this is just an intuition. Do you have any example of it, or,
Yeah, I will promote myself a little bit with my team that the recent paper we are working. We are trying actually to classify different B2B platform types and then associate different governance to these types based on decision rights and control rights. Right. So what you just mentioned is what we label as a solution enabler platform, right? That's a typical, you know, servitization, digital servitization platform where the platform owner controls the assets, controls also the platform, and the decision rights of complementors are minimal, right? They would allow specific complementors, but they would really pretty much tell them what they can do and what they cannot do, right? So the control of the structure and the decision rights are basically within the platform owner. But then we have also different types of platforms, and I touched a little bit with my a case of TradeLens, a notion where you have a consortium platforms, right? So then the control is distributed. Now it's not anymore within one company, it's distributed within a few companies, and then as a result, we have a collaborative governance, right? So it's not anymore a single company. Then if we go all the way to a completely decentralized decision-making and decentralized control, we will have a blockchain, fully blockchain-based platform where the governance will be algorithmic, right? We will have algorithmic governance. We will have a smart contracts. At the moment, we have very few examples. A TradeLens was probably ahead of time. It was too early and it was too big byte. It was end-to-end byte. That was probably too difficult to achieve, although the intentions were right and the solution was with a lot of potential. And then something that would be a traditional B2C, a type of platforms is what we label as regulated governance. Regulated is that, you know, the platform owner would control the platform, but then the decision rights will be distributed, right? So you as a complementor could, you know, join, not join, would, you know, have a proposition A, B, C, depending on your preferences, on your innovation capabilities. You would trade on that platform what you want. But still, you will not have influence on the control of the platform, right? So that makes a 2x2, where in the top left corner, we will have a unified governance. Above such governance, we will have regulated, and then on the distributed control level, we would have either consortium platform collaborative governance or full algorithmic governance in case of a blockchain-based platform. So this is the interaction with the cyber physical systems that we observed across different types, right, of B2B platforms. I don't know if I address the question fully.
Well, I think you did, even though Tomas was asked the question. And I think it's very interesting what you are bringing up to the table. It's like if this large world of platforms is kind of opening up for discussion that we already had in the innovation management literature, but really if the, in a more complex, wider world. And I think what is happening with technologies around us is making this type of reconsiderations of previous models something even more urgent and probably more impactful. Mm-hmm. But our time is getting to an end. So as we always open with the same question, we also close with the same question, which is basically where you are going. So what are you focusing on? What's the next big thing that that you're working on and you'd like to share it with us?
Yeah. So I'm fascinated by AI and I've learned enough to focus on the good cases only. So at the moment, the most advanced AI cases are in the medical sector, like in the medtech, specifically in radiology. So we have like very advanced cases of AI solutions for breast cancer, in bone age assessment, in neurology. So I'm focusing more and more to explore how specificities of AI in combination with different platforms are unfolding in this hospital setup, because this is the area where actual AI with advanced neural networks algorithms are basically making money. They are the only one, apart from the generative AI, that is kind of a different category of the AI. MedTech is the sector which is using the advanced AIs. So we see that some companies go standalone. They will sell the AI solution to the hospitals. We see already a platform aggregators in the hospital MedTech sectors. Why? Because the AI scope is very narrow, right? So you need to specialize on a specific disease, on a specific cancer. And then from the hospital perspective, this is only one problem. I would like to have a portfolio of AI solutions. So we see this aggregation of different AI startups or companies on the platform. And then there is another cyber physical, angle, that these hospital systems, they have their own PACS systems. These are historical information systems in the hospitals that are called PACS. So these are basically interfaces they use for transferring images. And mostly AIs are built on top of the different type of images in radiology, right? So we've seen also that the AI can augment these, PAD-dependent old systems. And that would be the third, let's say, approach to actually apply AI in the hospital sector, which is kind of. And I'm lucky enough that Denmark has a huge medtech sector around Novo Nordisk, so we are trying to leverage that as well.
That's very interesting. As always, we are going to link the articles you mentioned in the short notes of the episode. We know you're very active on LinkedIn, so our listeners can probably reach out there and get in touch if they want to know more about your research. And thanks for being here with us.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm Polimi, Politecnico di Milano alumni. So this was a pleasure. I also enjoy working with you and also contributing to all your projects. So it's been a pleasure. And thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Talking About Platforms.
You can rate the podcast on every major podcast app. This helps us a lot in growing.
Visit talkingaboutplatforms.com to get the links of the short notes, reach out to us, and see the previous episodes.
Hear you in another episode to talk about platforms.